This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. If you work in retail, you probably know the term shrinkage. It's when the inventory you brought into the store disappears. That's often due to shoplifting, sometimes by people outside of the store, sometimes by employees in the store. This spring in Michigan, a new law went into effect that says there's a difference between someone who swipes some lipstick and uses it and someone who steals stuff with the intent to sell it. That law, called the Organized Retail Crime Law, increases the offense from misdemeanor to a felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison or a $5,000 fine or both. Joining us to talk about the new law is Jeff Moronoff. He's a professor in the Department of Sociology and also the director of the Population Studies Center and Survey Research Center, both at the University of Michigan. So how much of a problem is this kind of theft from retailers?
Well, retail theft is a problem, and it costs a lot of money to shop owners and business owners every year, and there are also high recidivism rates among this population of offenders. So there's no getting around it. It is a big contribution to the cost of crime.
I was reading the National Retail Federation estimates this problem amounts to billions of dollars a year, something approaching $20 billion, maybe costing shoppers up to $500 a year in increased cost. MLive reported this has become more of a problem because internet services make it easier to sell stolen goods online. So is this new law in Michigan likely to be effective?
Well, it depends on what you mean by effective. If you really think of effectiveness as cost effectiveness, I think it's probably unlikely to be effective. I think that the amount of money that we'll end up spending on the increased corrections costs will far outweigh the gains in terms of what we gain through crime prevention.
Right. I was thinking, you know, in the long run, we all pay for this kind of crime and higher prices on the store shelves, but we also pay for incarceration. We pay for foster care if a single parent is convicted. So I'm wondering what kind of a balance is there here?
The new law takes people who previously would have been prosecuted for misdemeanors and prosecutes them for felonies, making them eligible for incarceration and longer sentences. It costs us roughly $2,300 a month in this country to imprison the average inmate. And when you expand that out to a year, it's about $28,000 per year per inmate. So incarceration is a very costly tool for crime prevention. And most criminologists would agree that even if it's effective at bringing down crime, it's not as cost effective as other remedies.
Let's take a look at a particular case. MLive reported on a pending case, a 26-year-old mother from the Grand Rapids area who was caught shoplifting with her children. She told police she planned to keep some of the stuff for herself and her kids, but then also told police she planned to sell some of the stuff she had stolen. That triggers the new law, right?
That's right. That's the organized aspect of organized retail fraud, where you're being prosecuted for a felony if you have intent to resell.
So in the worst-case scenario, we're talking about that $5,000 fine plus a five-year sentence for this woman. Who knows what happens to the kids? That's a real burden on society. But at the same time, they allegedly stole stuff. I mean, they're accused of taking stuff and they were going to sell it again. There ought to be some kind of punishment rather than just the slap on the wrist.
There definitely ought to be some kind of punishment. The question is, what's the most effective type of punishment? And most of the research on how people get deterred from committing future crime shows that the severity of the sanction or the punishment is not as important as the swiftness and the certainty that punishment will ensue. So just putting people in prison who otherwise might have gotten an alternative sentence like probation is not necessarily going to bring down the crime rate.
We've already been talking about maybe doing away with mandatory sentencing because it's really expensive to put people in prison, as you pointed out. But we've also seen cases like this where we're increasing from a misdemeanor to a felony, and that's automatically going to end up putting more people in prison, depending on how the judges use the law. There's a cost, but at the same time, do we want this society who says, well, look, it's just a small crime. It doesn't matter. When you talk about cost to society, that's one thing, but we want to prevent these kind of crimes as well.
Very true. And I think that there are a number of avenues that you could go down and take the money that you would have invested in increased costs of incarceration to bring down this type of crime. For example, investments in the police has been shown to be far more effective at reducing crime than investments in incarceration per se. Some criminologists who calculate the benefit-to-cost ratio for every dollar spent say that for every dollar spent on the police, you get four in return in benefit for bringing down the crime rate, whereas incarceration is at best a one-to-one or break-even strategy. There's also investments that you could make in early life programs for kids. Childhood education has been shown to have a pretty high benefit-to-cost ratio. And even further, there's also – you can invest in social cognitive skill development, which is a form of rehabilitation treatment.
So you're saying there's a lot of places we could spend this money, get better benefit than throwing someone in jail and paying $28,000 or more for incarceration.
Absolutely. And if I may, another strategy that's been used in other places that makes a lot of sense is one that would increase – the certainty and swiftness of punishment without increasing the severity or length of incarceration. The kind of emblem program out there is one in Hawaii called Project Hope, and it's being practiced by a judge who works with a high-risk group of probationers, many in a drug court, and basically puts them on round-the-clock drug surveillance, drug testing, random drug testing, and anytime somebody tests positive while they're on probation, they will be – there's a very high certainty that they're going to be sent back to prison but or jail, but for a very short stay. And it's these kind of repeated shocks that are very certain and swiftly executed that have been effective at reducing recidivism in this population. Now, who's to say what would happen if that were scaled up to the whole state of Michigan? But that is an example of a deterrence-based program that's a lot cheaper to implement and more effective.
At the same time, the retailers are really concerned about this problem. It costs them a lot of money. As we said, you know, approaching $20 billion across the nation. That's a big hunk of change that they have to deal with. They, the Michigan Retailers Association, gave the legislator who sponsored this legislation a big award saying this is the thing we needed done. So they're applauding this. Are you saying the retailers are a little short-sighted in how they view this crime?
Well, let me caveat what I'm about to say by saying that I haven't read all the remarks from the Retailers Association. But based on what you just said, yes, I would say that they are a little bit short-sighted, that there are other places that they, as an association, could invest their resources, such as business improvement districts, private security, official police law enforcement. All those things would probably be more effective at bringing down the crime rate than increasing the punishment associated with this type of retail fraud.
That's Jeff Morinoff. He's a professor in the Department of Sociology, also the director of the Population Studies Center and Survey Research Center at the University of Michigan, talking about the new organized retail crime law in Michigan. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.